Thank you, Jinshao. Again, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. So on slide 3 is the purpose of our session. So I will be providing you an overview of the exposure draft on subsidiaries without public accountability disclosures. We would welcome your views and comments so far on the proposals, including the questions we have for you, for the SMIG members on slide 24. So now on slide 4 is the contents of our presentation. So we will briefly cover the following. So the objective of the project, how disclosure requirements were developed, the structure and application of the draft IFRS standard. And with that, let's move on to the first topic. So on slide 6, so how the project came into about. So the board undertook the project following stakeholders' feedback at the 2015 agenda consultation. Those stakeholders observed that when a parent applies IFRS standards in its consolidated financial statements, it will require its subsidiaries for consolidation purposes to report applying the recognition and measurement requirements in IFRS. Now, in the subsidiaries' own financial statements, if they apply IFRS standards, they have to give all the disclosures, some of which are designed to meet user needs of publicly accountable entities. If they apply the IFRS for SMEs or a local GAAP, they might be able to give fewer disclosures but need to keep an additional accounting records depending on how different the recognition and measurement requirements are from IFRS. As such, those respondents asked the board to permit subsidiaries to use the recognition and measurement principles in IFRS but with reduced disclosure requirements. Such a standard would allow subsidiaries to apply IFRS and therefore align their accounting policies with their parent whenever applicable while still retaining information needed by the users of those financial statements. So on slide 7 is the exposure draft proposals. So the board's proposed solution is to develop a new IFRS standard. So it will be part of IFRS standards that will provide subsidiaries meeting certain criteria to apply recognition, measurement, and presentation requirements in IFRS, but with reduced disclosure requirements. The proposed standard is optional. Subsidiaries could elect and are not compelled to apply this standard. The disclosure requirements are reduced compared to what would otherwise be required applying current IFRS. The disclosures subsidiaries would provide are those that are intended to meet their users' information needs. On slide 8 is the benefits of the proposals. So primarily, it would reduce costs for preparers. So if they previously applied reporting framework other than IFRS, they would be able to align their accounting policies with that of their parent, which could minimize the need to maintain another set of accounting records. If they are already applying IFRS, reduced disclosures could translate to reduced work for the accounting team and reduce use of company's resources. So although the standard has fewer disclosures compared to those currently required in IFRS, usefulness of financial statements is maintained because the approach applied by the board in developing the disclosures considered the nature of these eligible subsidiaries as well as users' information needs. So the draft standard being an optional IFRS standard would mean that a subsidiary would have to satisfy itself first that the cost of applying it justifies the benefits provided by the standard. So let's talk about who are these eligible subsidiaries on slide 9. So the proposed standard can be applied by subsidiaries in its consolidated, separate, or individual financial statements, provided that they don't have public accountability and they have a parent, intermediate, or ultimate, that applies IFRS standards in its consolidated financial statements. Now, these two criteria are not new. Public accountability is based on the description in the IFRS for SMEs, and a company is not publicly accountable if its debt or equity instruments is not traded in a public market and does not hold assets in fiduciary capacity as one of its primary businesses. And then the other criteria is based on one of the conditions in IFRS 10 that exempts an entity from preparing consolidated financial statements. So let's have a quick illustration on slide 10. So on scenario 1, we have a parent that prepares consolidated financial statements applying IFRS. And a subsidiary that does not have public accountability. In this case, the subsidiary is eligible. And then let's go to scenario 2. So we have a parent that prepares consolidated financial statements applying local GAAP. So it's not IFRS. And then even if the subsidiary is not publicly accountable, it's not eligible to apply the draft standard. And then let's go to scenario 3. So in this case, we have like two level of parents. So we have an ultimate parent that prepares consolidated financial that does not prepare consolidated financial statements, and we have an intermediate parent that prepares consolidated financial statements applying IFRS. And then in this case, if the subsidiary does not have public accountability, then it's eligible to apply the draft IFRS standard. So with that, let's move on to the next part of the topic, which is how are the disclosure requirements developed? So on slide 12, so on a high level, the board used the IFRS for SMEs as its starting point. This is because those who are eligible to apply the draft standard, so the subsidiaries, could also apply the IFRS for SMEs. And the disclosure requirements in the IFRS for SMEs are already tailored to the needs of its users, of companies without public accountability, and also incorporates cost-benefit considerations. This approach does not require the board to develop new disclosure requirements because all disclosures are either based in IFRS or in IFRS for SMEs. Now going a bit deeper on slide 13. So the approach is to use the disclosures in IFRS for SMEs if the recognition and measurement principles are the same as that in IFRS, subject to only minor tailoring. So aligning language and updating cross-references. Now, when they differ, the board used the disclosure requirements in IFRS but tailored it by applying the principles it used in considering users' information needs in IFRS for SMEs. So the board made this analysis on a standard-by-standard or topic-by-topic basis. So for example, in analyzing which disclosures should be required for inventories, it compared IS2, the IFRS standard for inventories, and Section 13, the equivalent section in IFRS for SMEs. So on slide 14 are the principles that the board used in tailoring the disclosures when there is a recognition and measurement difference. So these are set out in paragraph BC157 of the basis for conclusions on the IFRS for SMEs. They are used to identify the information that users find important. So users find important those that provide information about short-term cash flows, obligations, and commitments. So the ability of the company to meet its obligations. Measurement uncertainties like how provisions are measured or how impairment is calculated, inputs used on those calculations. Disaggregation of amounts like the reconciliation of PPE or defined benefit liabilities. Accounting policy choices like how you measure your inventories or intangible assets. And liquidity and solvency, so the ability of the entity, in this case the subsidiary, to generate cash flows and continuous a going concern. Now, as I said earlier, the board compared the requirements in IFRS and IFRS for SMEs for each topic. So the question becomes, which IFRS standards? So the board considered issued IFRS standards as of 28th of February 2021 and exposure drafts published as of 1st of January 2021, except for IFRS 17, IFRS 8, and IS 33, and the exposure draft on general presentation and disclosures. So let me just talk about these three standards. So if an eligible subsidiary has an insurance contract within the scope of IFRS 17, that subsidiary would have to apply all the disclosure requirements in IFRS 17. And then normally, an eligible subsidiary would not be in the scope of IAS 33. But if that subsidiary opted to disclose earnings per share, it is required to apply IAS 33, including providing all its required disclosures. Similarly, an eligible subsidiary would not be required to apply IFRS 8. If that subsidiary opted to disclose segment information, it would have, in accordance with IFRS 8, it has to apply IFRS 8, including all its required disclosures. If such segment information is not in compliance with IFRS 8, the board adopted the disclosure requirement in IFRS for SMEs wherein the subsidiary has to disclose the basis of how such segment information was prepared. So let's now talk about the structure and application of the draft standard. So on slide 17 is the structure of the draft standard. So the draft IFRS standard is a disclosure-only standard. It does not contain any recognition, measurement, or presentation requirements. And then the disclosure requirements are organized by IFRS standard. So for example, if you have leases, you would go to subheading IFRS 16 in determining what disclosures should be provided. So on slide 18, just a quick illustration. So let's just say, for example, we're talking about reporting or disclosures about inventories. So the subsidiary would apply IAS-2, the applicable IFRS standard for inventories, to determine how to recognize and measure it. But it would apply the proposed IFRS standard to determine what information should be disclosed. So I said earlier, now in this particular example, all disclosure requirements about inventory can be found in the relevant subheading of the proposed IFRS standard. However, in some cases, other disclosure requirements in other IFRS standards could also apply. Those disclosure requirements are not in the draft standard, for example, because it's best to leave those disclosure requirements for context. So a good example would be the disclosure on going concern in IS-1. So that particular disclosure requirement is left in IS-1 because paragraphs that follow the disclosure requirements provide further guidance about it. Now, to provide a complete picture, reference about such disclosure requirements is included in the draft standard as a footnote to the subheading of the IFRS standard to which they relate. So in this case, the going concern is in IS-1, the related footnote is in the subheading of IS-1. Now, talking about the timeline, so the exposure draft, as Jin Xiao has noted, has been published in July, at the end of July 2021 and with a 180-day comment period ending 31st of January 2022. We expect to bring back to the board the feedback in first half of 2022. And then included in this slide is also the link to the exposure draft, including the basis for conclusions. Now, some frequently asked questions. So we'll talk about IFRS 1 and transition in the next slides. So let me talk about compliance statement. So a subsidiary electing to apply the draft standard is required to state that it has applied the draft standard and should be located in the same note as the statement of compliance required by IS 1. And then in terms of maintaining the standard, if the board finalizes this IFRS standard, it will consider amendments to it when it publishes an exposure draft of a new or amended IFRS standard. This is to facilitate consideration of the appropriate amendments to the standards at the time that the related amendments to the IFRS standards are being discussed. Now let's talk, move on to the next slide, on slide 21. So transition to draft IFRS standard and interaction with IFRS 1. So the draft standard has no special transition provisions. So first, let's talk about its interaction with IFRS 1. So on the left corner of the slide, so if the subsidiary already applied IFRS standards and then elected to apply the proposed standard, in this case, it elects to apply in 20X2, then that financial statement is not its first IFRS financial statements and therefore would not apply IFRS 1. On the contrary, if the subsidiary previously applied the reporting framework other than IFRS, then that subsidiary would have to apply IFRS 1 in its first IFRS financial statements. Now, one thing to highlight here is that even though that subsidiary would apply IFRS 1 in its first IFRS financial statements, in terms of disclosures in its transition to IFRS, it would apply the disclosure requirements in the draft standard set out in the subheading IFRS 1. Now, talking about comparative information. So on the first scenario, so the subsidiary applied the draft standard in the current period, but not in the preceding period. So obviously, there would be less disclosures in the current period. And in its 20X2 financial statements, current year financial statements, it would only provide the comparative information only for those information reported in 20X2. So say, for example, just a random example, if there's a disclosure required in IFRS 15 that you provided in 20X1, but that disclosure is not required in the draft standard, then you don't have to reproduce it as your comparative information in 20X2. And then on the other scenario, you applied the draft standard in the preceding period, but you revoked that election. Then obviously, in your current year financial statements, in this case in 20X2, more disclosures will be provided in the current period. And then in its 20X2 financial statements, it will provide 20X1 comparative information for financial information reported in 20X2. So in this case, if you revoke that election and you will be required to provide the disclosure in 20X2 that would otherwise not be required had you applied the draft standard, then you would have to reproduce that as a comparative information. Okay. And I think that ends our presentation. So if you have any questions, clarifications about the exposure draft or about the presentation, before moving on to our questions on slide 24.
Okay. Pirin, please. Yeah, thanks, Carlo. Pirin.
Thank you, Chen Xiao. I have two questions. The first question is on the interlink between this exposure draft with on the disclosure requirement. So if the ISB decides to proceed with the new approach for the disclosure requirements in IFRS standard, how would this change the IFRS, say this standard is IFRS X? Well, my second question maybe is an obvious question. I see that your slides 20 say that, you know, if a entity eligible subsidiary have applied the reduced disclosure, it shall also disclose that fact. So if a subsidiary does not elect to apply this IFRS X, I presume it is still able to assert IFRS compliance, right? So these are my two questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy. Carla, would you like to?
Yep, I'll try to respond. And then Michelle wanted to add something. So I think on the second question is whether if the subsidiary did not elect to apply the standard, whether it has to disclose it in its compliance statement. Is that your question, Billy? So I think in that case, it's not required to disclose the fact that it did not apply the draft standard. So the fact that it says that they applied IFRS, that should be enough. You should. That means you should also be able to comply with IFRS. And then on the interaction with TSLR, I think it's something that the board would have to consider as well. So although both projects are under the disclosure initiative umbrella, it has different focus. Although the ultimate objective is to provide better information, it's just that in this case, for these subsidiaries, those disclosures that are not necessary or not useful for its users, so being users of non-publicly accountable entities, those are not being required.
So I think in the exposure draft, in the basis of conclusions, we make clear that in developing the disclosures proposed in the exposure draft, we've removed all objective-based standards, because what we're trying to do is to focus on giving subsidiaries a list of disclosures to make, so similar to the approach that's taken in the IFRS for SMEs. In addition, the basis, and I think the request for information has a question on maintenance of the standard. And what the board are proposing is, in the future, when they make an exposure draft, and that exposure draft includes either amendments or new disclosures, it would look at those disclosures, apply the principles in BC 157, and then make proposed amendments to any future standard. So if this was IFRS 18, there would also be, within the exposure draft, proposing amendments, consequential amendments to this standard. Now, I think that's slightly different from the approach that is taken in some other jurisdictions where they do an annual update of this standard.
Yes, thank you, Michelle. And I think appealing and knocking her head, that means she's happy with the answer. Okay, that's good. And now let's go to Raymond. Raymond.
Thank you, Xinqiao. Just an overall comment on the questions that are on slide 24. From where I stand, I think welcome this project wholeheartedly. I think there are a lot of companies in the jurisdictions in which I work, who are welcoming this with open arms, for the simple fact that they find themselves in that awkward space where they don't really need everything that is sitting in full IFRS, but at the same time, IFRS for SMEs itself does not necessarily give them, or the fact that they've got a parent that requires the information is what's leading them to the point where they're having to produce a set of financial statements in full IFRS, and they don't actually need that information for their decision making. So from that point of view, this will certainly find an audience, it'll certainly find a space where it fits. When I look at the benefits, that have been that you've highlighted, I certainly agree with the reduction in cost, because I think that's what a lot of people have been bleating about. They've got all this additional information that they're putting forward in a set of financial statements. But what the reason why they're reporting the way that they are is because a parent company requires the information, and maybe the tax authorities require some information, but not necessarily everything that they're putting into the set of financial statements that they're preparing in terms of full IFRS. The principles that you've adopted in developing the disclosure requirements, I agree with those as well. I think that's we're going down the right path there. There may be some finessing that needs to happen as we go along, but certainly I think we are heading in the right direction. Whether or not the information is going to be useful, I think it will be, because the audience for these sorts of financial statements tend to have access to other information in any event. So whatever information maybe will be sitting in the financial statements is likely to still be of value to them. And then whether or not I'm happy, we'd be happy to participate in the outreach activities. Absolutely. I think the eyes we just need only ask. We would certainly be happy to see what we can do to try and help with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Raymond. And Ayodele?
Okay, thank you very much. But I agree with Raymond totally, and I also want to state that possibly before when the board came up, I think this has been one of the things that they're clamoring for. It's always good when you have a parent company having a standard aligned with the subsidiary, but I'm sure the subsidiary is XLB. So in terms of the scope, let me first of all appreciate the board for coming up with it. I'm happy with it, and I'm also grateful that it's something that will go a long way to help the subsidiaries, especially the ones that the subsidiary that are SME. So I agree totally with the board. And also in terms of the benefits, I also believe this will also reduce the cost for the subsidiary that apply SMEs. So. For the principles of developing the disclosure, well, I also support the principle which the board has proposed. For the outreach, I also be willing and ready to participate in the outreach activities. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ayoda. And Lionheart.
Yeah, thank you. Just one fundamental comment. I'm not too sure whether the purpose of the SME standard and the purpose of this new standard are clearly aligned. So, and that kind of drives whether it's ultimately fit for purpose and useful. I would have thought that a subsidiary is preparing all the information anyways for submission to the parent company, because the parent company needs to comply with the full disclosure requirements of all IFRS standards, no matter what. So this is really a question of how much of that information ultimately goes into the separate financial statements of the subsidiary. Whereas for SMEs, the question is whether they have the information or can produce the information. So I would have thought the starting point is quite different. And therefore, I'm wondering whether such misalignment could potentially cause some issues, for example, requiring disclosure of information for the subsidiary that actually serves no real purpose, because the stakeholders are different. And, you know, a lot of stakeholders will rely on the parent consolidated financial statements, for example, for lending decisions and the likes. So I'm just not quite sure whether the purpose of the two are truly aligned. I think that the initiative is a very good one, and it would save a lot of effort. And from my perspective, everybody in the financial reporting ecosystem is spending an awful lot of time doing all this and auditing it ultimately and publishing it and doing whatever you need to do with it. And the benefit actually is potentially limited, but I'm not sure. I would feel more comfortable if there would be a comparison between what would you require if you would start with a blank piece of paper for the subsidiaries and then compare it to what we require for the SMEs, and if there's a good match and a good alignment, then it makes sense to have one standard. But at the moment, it's difficult for me to assess whether there would be so much alignment or not.
Michelle,
so I see the benefit of having just one standard and then apply it in two different ways. Again, I'm not actually convinced it will work, and it will be a hybrid model anyways, because some of the measurement differences between SMEs and full IFRS will require additional consideration for disclosures for this subsidiary financials.
So let me try and answer your question, and then if any of the other board members want to add anything. So when the board started the project, they said these subsidiaries could already apply the IFRS for SME standard. So we can start with the disclosures in the IFRS for SME standard, because the board had already deemed that they're fit for purpose for the subsidiaries' financial statements. So we started with those disclosures that it could already apply. We looked at recognition and measurement differences. When we looked at recognition and measurement differences between the IFRS for SMEs and full IFRS, when we took disclosures, we only took disclosures from full IFRS. So the approach the board effectively had meant that it wasn't developing any new disclosures anywhere, and it was confident that its starting point it had already deemed fit for purpose. I think the important point on the matter of cost is that if we go back to the very first, the second slide with the diagram, if that's possible, the point that we're making is by using the reporting pack that the subsidiary has submitted to the parent as the base for its financial statements, either it's going to reduce the disclosures, and it could be that the reporting pack has been prepared to a group materiality level. But what's important is, as well, if you were doing local GAAP for your, if you were doing local GAAP financial statements or IFRS for SMEs financial statements, the disclosures would be different, and possibly recognition and measurement would be different. Or probably recognition and measurement would be different, and therefore disclosures would be different. With the approach that we're proposing, we eliminate those recognition and measurement differences. So there's no need to keep linked financial statements. So in a previous life, I was a preparer, and we used to keep what we called the bridge between our consolidation pack and our separate financial statements, and that bridge was quite difficult to maintain between the local GAAP and the parent company GAAP. The whole idea of this is we reduce all of the need to maintain that bridge, because recognition and measurement is the same, and disclosures, because you start with the IFRS for SMEs disclosures, you know they're fit for purpose. But also the IFRS for SMEs disclosures starts with IFRS disclosures, so you tend to come back to the same place. So I don't know if anyone wants to add anything to what I've just said.
Yeah, I just want to add. Renat, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think a lot of people get very confused about this project when we talk about it, and then we talk about SMEs as the starting point. And then people start asking me, well, hang on, is it SMEs? Is it not? Who's it designed for? And in some ways, you're right. In a perfect world, we would almost have started with a blank piece of paper and built it up from there. But I think we did start with the SMEs because of exactly the reason that Michelle spoke about, in that we'd already been through that exercise of looking at the disclosures and deciding whether or not those were applicable to a non-publicly accountable entity. I guess the one thing I just wanted to say is I think that the people need to bear in mind that the objectives of these two standards are, in my mind, completely differently or worlds apart. Yes, they're both going to apply to what we consider to be non-publicly accountable entities, but I think they're different types of entities. Remember, for somebody applying the IFRS for SMEs, we're generally looking at them as the reporting entity. They're the one who are preparing their accounts, and a lot of time they are the simpler entities, and we're looking to try and make things easier. All this to me is in this project is we're trying to find that relief four subsidiaries, and I've been in the same position as Michelle, where, you know, as a preparer, you're preparing these dozens of subsidiary accounts. And remember, when you're preparing the standalone accounts, you're doing it to that individual entity's materiality, not a group materiality. So I agree. I mean, the recognition and measurement will feed up, but there's tons of disclosure that was just being given in standalone subsidiary accounts, where, classic example, you're 100% owned by a holding company. There really is nobody else looking at your set of accounts, but you're still going through this onerous requirement of doing everything. So I think that this is where that standard kicks in and makes it a lot easier. And I anticipate will be very much welcomed, especially in the preparer community, where there's very limited use for those financials. But I think it's just key to remember, and I think it's to reiterate what Michelle said, as much as we started with the SMEs disclosures, I think we've got to be conscious that as time progresses, the perceived link to the SME standard is going to disappear. Because remember, the SME standard we update once every 5 odd years, whereas full IFRS we're updating continually. And this standard will need continual update at the same time as the full IFRS does, whereas the SMEs won't. So I think maybe the way to think about that is SMEs was a starting point because it gave us kind of a great leap start into getting this project going. But the link to the SME standard will definitely disappear over time.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I was just wondering, for example, related party disclosures, whether there could be further simplification for these type of subsidiaries, because everybody is aware that they are part of the group. And therefore, disclosing that you paid the group $500 a year for tax services is pretty pointless, I would think, right? So I'm more coming from the angle that there could be additional items that you could look into and provide relief for subsidiaries that would not want to be provided for SMEs.
And that'll be fantastic to get the comments on from people as to where we can make further simplifications. Because if we hear from everybody that there are areas like that where we can simplify, and that's a common message, we'd happily move it that way. Thank you.
Padio,
preparing financial statements, you have actually, if I could say, two exercises. One is related to recognition and measurement, and another one is preparing the financial statements itself. I mean, the disclosures, primary financial statement, etc. I mean, that these companies, they already have the recognition measurement, or some of these recognition measurement sometimes is performed by the parent company, not exactly by the subsidiary. I mean, that in the end of the day, if this company, subsidiaries, need to prepare financial statements, their big work in the end of the day will be the financial statements, the disclosures. And then what we are trying to do is to reduce this cost. But I also heard in this meeting today, some people say that, why can't I capitalize borrowing costs? Why can't I apply some of the principles or recognition measurement that I have in IFRS full, in IFRS for SMEs as well? I mean, that's, in the end of the day, it reflects that some of these companies that are SMEs that could apply IFRS for SMEs, actually they would like to apply IFRS full, but they wouldn't have like to have the burden of preparing a full set of financial statements with all the disclosures. Because in the end of the day, if you're just thinking about why we have to disclose a lot of things, it is because of the user needs. And the user needs for the small and medium entities is different from those that are not small and medium entities. I need to disclose less. That's the point. And we did a very good exercise, not only for looking to equity investors, but also looking at for lenders, for example, what they need. And all what to try to reflect in this one is a kind of materiality exercise. Maybe a company applying IFRS full would come up with a set of disclosures that very close to what we are proposing here, because it reflects user needs. And then therefore, I think it's quite consistent with both standards. It's just almost a matter of materiality exercise.
Thanks, Tadio. Hopefully, this clarifies the concern, the question raised by Reinhardt. I think, Reinhardt, do you have any further question about that?
No, I'm fine.
No, yeah.
Fine.
Okay. So now, next, Yuna.
Thank you. I absolutely support this standard. I think there are lots of benefits for eligible subsidiaries. I think it will provide useful information, right? And obviously, take part in any outreach that you want. The one I skipped there was the principles for developing disclosures, and I suppose I have two concerns in that, which I'm only thinking about. I've not got a decision on them, nor have I done the work to identify whether there really is an issue. But I have a concern that some of the disclosures taken from the IFRS for SME standard may not align completely with the actual disclosures that are in full IFRS. And while I think the principle of identifying what disclosure should be should come from the IFRS for SME standard, I actually think the language should come from full IFRS. Now, to what extent that is actually an issue, I don't know, because I have not done the background, but that is a kind of concern I have that I need to look at. Because, you know, the language that was in the IFRS-ME was drafted to suit the standard. Whereas, you know, if you're looking at picking subset of the consolidation cap that a subsidiary disclose, I think that language should be aligned. So that was one. And the second one, and again, I'm not sure that this is an issue, but I suppose I have a small concern, particularly around very specialised entities in large groups, like, for example, a specialised treasury company, that whether the limited disclosures around financial instruments, if they are the only items that are on the balance sheet and what the company does, will that get me to a true and fair view? And again, as I said, I have not concluded on that. It's just a concern I have that the limited disclosures for a specialised entity like that, will they be enough? So I just wanted to put those out there and maybe have people think about it. Thank you.
Okay. So I think I can answer both of those points. On the language point, we have tried our hardest to align the language back to IFRS. I mean, obviously, if you have comments on what's in the standard, we'd be interested in the exposure draft, we'd be interested here, but we have tried our best. And then on the specialised treasury function, there are disclosures that come from IFRS 7 and obviously under the IFRS 7 heading, but we also make the point, and I think it's from ISMIS 1, that if you need additional disclosures, that disclosure still stands. So I'll try and find it and put a note in the chat for you.
Yes, thank you. Okay, yeah.
Is there any more comments?
I think it's calming.
Okay. Yes, so next, Michelle already has answered the questions Yuna mentioned. I think this is why when Carlo mentioned that when we borrow those, not borrow, but based on those disclosure requirements of IFRS for SME standard, we actually update those terminologies and to make sure that those language are consistent with for IFRS standard, because those disclosure in the end should supplement to the, you know, to the recognition and measurement part of IFI standard rather than SME standard. So try to make those, you know, recognition, measurement and disclosure requirements being, you know, consistent with each other. But you raise a very good point, and we are looking forward your comments on exposure draft, whether we have done enough, you know, to make sure they are consistent with each other. Oh, okay, so next, Raymond? Is this Raymond? Carmen. Yeah, I still cannot. Carmen, yeah.
Hi. I guess I just wanted to share the Australian experience. So we have, for a while, had two tiers of general purpose financial statements, both of which require full recognition and measurement of IFRS. And what we did in the first iteration was take all the IFRS standards and reduced the disclosures down. the new iteration, which becomes mandatorily effective from next year, we actually did exactly what's been done here. We took the IFRS for SME disclosures, compared the recognition and measurement in full IFRS with IFRS for SMEs, and now have a standalone standard, which is very much based on the IFRS for SME. The feedback we've had has been incredibly positive. It's not yet mandatory, but people are certainly quite keen to early adopt that. And in respect to the language that has just been raised, people actually quite like the language of IFRS for SME because it is much easier to understand in many cases than full IFRS. So I just wanted to share that feedback from over here.
Thank you. Thank you, Carmen. I think you provide another insight information for us in terms of language. Thank you. And Edison.
Thank you, Jinchao. So I do have a general question. So in one hand, we have this project dealing with improving subsidiary financial statement disclosures, allowing them, even using IFRS standard, to use IFRS for SME disclosure in order to reduce costs and efforts. On the other hand, staff has another project, as far as I remember, ongoing, which is Disclosure Initiative, target standard level review of disclosure with the objectives to improve disclosure for the IFRS standards, starting with IFRS 13 and IAS 19, as far as I remember. Are there any connection between both projects? Staff can get some advantages of the other projects to support this project.
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's about, yeah. I think you raise a very good question because this project is also on the umbrella of broader, you know, disclosure initiative. And I think if my understanding is correct, is that you raise a question is that currently we are using IFRS 13 and IFRS 19 to test our new model, how to draft our disclosure part, for example, objective, and what kind of disclosure requirement need to support that objective. And now our exposure draft on subsidy with other public accountability, actually we try to simplify those disclosure requirements, particularly in relation to the disclosure objective. So the question you ask is about whether there is some connection or inconsistency with this project with another, that's a disclosure initiative. This is whether my understanding is correct or not, that is what you...
This is my question. So at the end of the day, so don't we have some disconnection between both or in the other hand, so can we take advantage from the other project to support this project as well?
I think both
are related to disclosure, no?
Okay, yeah, Tadio would like to, yeah.
In the end of the day, what we are trying to achieve with our proposal on disclosure requirements basically brings something that is already in the standards, specifically in IS 1, that's the need for exercising judgment to determine what is the adequate disclosure. And then I don't think that it has any inconsistency what we are proposing here. It is a kind of very simple try again to meet the user's needs. I mean that our former board member Francoise used to say that we are just helping the SMEs to exercise their judgment when we reduce the disclosure. I mean that it's what is exactly the user needs. And again, I don't think that is an inconsistency. And what we are proposing with the disclosure requirement standards is basically bring something that is already in IS1, that's the materiality exercise, bringing more judgment, not necessarily changing disclosures.
Yes, just building on what Tadio said, that I think the objective and the scope of this project is very unique comparing to others the standard, because four IFI standards serve the needs of capital market, So obviously, investors would like to have more information, particularly with those information, have clear objective there, and then prepare need to provide those useful information for users. But for this project, particularly we focus on those subsidiaries without public accountability. But and the for the apparent consolidated financial purpose, they needed to apply IFRS, you know, for IFRS standards. Actually, they are eligible to apply, you know, IFRS for SME standard. So that means they can disclose less information. The problem is that for the apparent consolidation financial statement purpose, they needed to apply IFRS, you know, IFRS standards. And then it results in for those companies, they need to provide a lot of more information, which is, I think, users may not need those too much information because the users are different, the users' needs are different. So this is why we try to reduce those information, but reduce the cost for those companies, but still provide useful information for those companies without public accountability, because those the users are slightly different. For example, those subsidiaries without the public accountability, the main users are creditors rather than investors. The information is they will focus on short-term cash flow, liquidity risks, something like that, different from those users from capital markets. So I think the objective is clear and consistent, and so this is the initial intention of the board to develop the proposals to reduce disclosures burden for those companies, subsidiaries without public accountability. But in the meantime, still provide useful information for users of those subsidiaries without public accountability. Michelle, do you want to add anything?
No.
Yeah. But thank you for Anderson. You know, you raised a very good question to in relation to this project. Thank you. And Billing?
Thank you, Jen Chiao. We have heard views from both sides, but of course, the good news is generally we heard support of the exposure draft, but on the condition that when finalized, it shall remain as optional for eligible subsidiaries. So with the option, preparers may apply the proposed standard for smaller subsidiaries while retaining the full IFRS disclosure for material subsidiaries. In our jurisdiction, all the companies in the group are required by law to lodge their individual separate financial statements to the Companies Commission, and the subsidiaries apply the MFRS, which are work forward the IFRS standards. So I'm sharing those stakeholders who want the subsidiary company's separate financial statement to provide the same level of disclosure. They believe that in the case whereby the parent company is merely an investment holding with all operation carried out at the subsidiaries, it is important for the heavyweight subsidiaries to provide full IFRS disclosure in view of the risk residing at those subsidiaries. And users of financial statements might not be able to identify such specific subsidiaries at the consolidated financial statement in view that the consolidated disclosure aggregate all the subsidiaries of the group, i.e. reflecting the group's operations and risk as a whole. Also, minority shareholders of subsidiaries could be disadvantaged with the reduced disclosures as they were not able to obtain comprehensive financial information from the subsidiary separate financial statements. Some preparers, specifically those at the parent level, share with us in their perspective the preparation of financial statement with full disclosures at the subsidiary level, provide them good management control, and including the visibility of the numbers floating up and being reported by the subsidiaries. On the cost savings, to the contrary, some stakeholders noted unintended costs may be incurred because the subsidiary will still need to provide a supplementary reporting package for the preparation of the full IFRS disclosure in the consolidated financial statement. Hence, additional costs will need to be incurred by management for preparation of this group reporting package and by the auditor who reviewed this package. In another situation for some, we were informed that particularly smaller group which may not have group reporting package, the audited financial statement of the subsidiary is used to compile the financial information. So having full disclosure at the subsidiary's level would be helpful. And if overseas subsidiaries are involved, the parent level would probably feel more comfortable with the audited financial statements being in compliance with full disclosure. Having said the above, we have also heard views that from some other stakeholders who commented that the option for reduced disclosure should also be made available to associates and joint venture. If we can accept the usefulness of financial statement is maintained for users with reduced disclosure at subsidiary level, we should also accept the same reduced disclosure for associates or joint ventures. Thank you.
Thank you, Peeling. I think
so
you.
I can try and respond to those points. So I understand what you say, that in your jurisdiction, your subsidiaries are required, your operating subsidiaries are required to do full IFRS financial statements. And I think in jurisdictions where you have the requirement to do full IFRS by those subsidiaries, there would be a reduced, it would be moving to a reduced disclosure framework. But I think in most places, what is regulated is the consolidated financial statements. So I think that might be in jurisdictions where that, I think it's quite unusual, but if it does happen, then there would be, you would be moving to reduce disclosures and you would want to think about that. I think in terms of minority shareholders, what the board stated was they were starting with the IFRS for SMEs because it had deemed the disclosures in the IFRS for SMEs were appropriate for SMEs, and subsidiaries are a subset of these SMEs. So we didn't see that was any disadvantage being made there when we look at the IFRS for SMEs. In relation to the IFRS is a good control, I think if you're in a framework where you have full IFRS for these subsidiaries in their local financial statements, then that's a decision that you can make. But what we've also heard from some users of financial statements is actually the reduced disclosure framework will improve financial reporting because many subsidiaries do a pack that is submitted at group level, at group materiality level, and IFRS isn't as well complied with at the subsidiary level. But by actually doing their financial statements complying with IFRS at their specific materiality level, they would see this as being an improvement because local preparers would be more involved in the preparation of IFRS financial statements. I'm not sure that I understood where the supplementary costs were coming from, because we're not putting any cost in the system here. The whole objective is about taking cost out of the system. So I can't quite see where your point on supplementary costs is coming from. On the scope, and I think that was one of the questions we had, the board did think about extending the scope to associates and joint ventures, and that is outlined in the basis of conclusions, and we would be happy to hear your comments on that.
Thanks, Monsieur Tadio.
Just to add that it's supposed to be an optional standard. Yeah. Therefore, if any any jurisdiction that feel that might not fit into their local requirements, they still have the option, simply not allowed this standard there. Another point that I think that's important is that I know that the project team doesn't like we say that, but it is applicable for the SMEs. You know that we have a different name, public, not without accountability, public accountability. But we are talking about subsidiaries that are SMEs. That's the old name of the,
well,
the standard.
I guess we changed it from subsidiaries that are SMEs because we found that people were putting too much emphasis on the SME part and getting confused about the application of the IFRS for SMEs disclosure requirements. So we did change it back, but today is correct.
I agree, but that, just to make the point that even if the company has non-controlling interest, if it has the option, if it is, it meets the definition of SME, it can, and I mean that without public accountability, it can apply IFRS for SME. Therefore, our proposal is just going up.
Yeah.
There is no actually downside here in terms of information.
Yeah, thank you. And I see Billing and nodding the head against it. That's good. That's good. Okay, Jenny.
I'm sharing about what we heard, okay?
Jenny, please. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, just a quick comment to say that we've had a similar sort of standard. There are some differences in scope and requirements operating in the UK and Ireland for a number of years now, which seems to have been well received and well applied. And so I would expect anticipate that, you know, similar benefits might be seen in other jurisdictions from this project. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny. Okay. Are there any comments? Carlo, do you have any questions needed to ask new members as well?
I think aside from the questions we have on slide 24.
24, I think many SMIG members have already answered the questions, including slide 24. Are there any additional comments or questions, particular questions you would like to ask? No, this seems not the case. Yeah. Okay. I wonder, Michelle, do you want before closing the?
No, but Carla has told me it's paragraph 31 of the ED that is the one that you were making the reference that you were looking for.
Okay. And also I look at Anne or the Dio and the Bruce. My fellow board members, do you have any additional comments or questions? Okay,
none from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. You know, I think it's a little bit late for you.
a few other people as well. Not just
Carmen, it's a bit late for as well.
Thank you.
Carmen.
So, Carmen, yes. And the Chi and Lei as well, yeah. Okay, so I think now it's come to the end of this session. Thanks, Carlo, for provide updated information on this project. It seems that many members are very interested in this project, but the basic information I get is, I think there are a lot of support of this project generally. And another thing is that, as Billing said, that you also said that it's an optional. So standards, I think it's really up to your guys to decide whether you're going to apply this standard or not. Also up to different jurisdictions, regulators, and the standard setters decide. But at least we provide an option and also response to the concerns raised by some stakeholders during our last round of agenda consultation. Hopefully, also we are looking forward to your written comments on this exposure draft. Thank you so much, and thanks again to Carlo and Michelle. Yeah. So now I think it's come to the end of today's SMIG meeting. I think the meeting is very well, and we've received a lot of detailed comments, feedback, and new informations. Thank you so much for your input and contribution, particularly your recommendation to us. I think that's really useful for us to move forward on this project. In relation to the next step, I think the staff will draft a report for today's meeting and then circulate it to you to seek the further comments on this draft report. And then the staff will develop their proposal based on the recommendation you made today. And then the board will discuss the staff's proposal, still based on the your recommendation and your feedback. Thank you so much. And in terms of the timeline, I think you have read the agenda paper. I think the agenda paper one, where I think we are going to, once the board made a decision, and the staff will start to draft the exposure draft. But I think it's, as the paper, staff paper mentioned, that it is unlikely we are going to issue the exposure draft before the second half of 2022. And also another thing I would like to remind you is that when Monsieur Fisher presented the financial instrument part of the paper, we are going to set up a sub group of SMIGA members. I think we welcome any one of you if you have interest in this sub group, or if you have any experience of implementing IFRS 9, we're welcome to join that subgroup, and we would like to seek further, you know, contribution from you. In relation to other projects, maybe in the future, we will still consult you in relation to the other topics. So we welcome you to any, you know, feedback and the contribution from you. Thank you so much. So once again, I also like to thank all the staff. You know, you made a really good job, you know, contribute a lot, particularly sacrifice your summer break to prepare the papers and summarize and prepare the meetings. Thank you so much. Also, I would like to thank my fellow board members, you know, Tadeo, Bruce, and Taka again. Thank you again, and stay safe. Hopefully the pandemic, it will be over in the next few months, and then we can have physical meeting, really can meet you in person. From my bottom, from the bottom of my heart, I really would like to see you in person, because you contribute a lot to our project, and hopefully the next stage, particularly hopefully the next meeting, could have a physical meeting in London office, you know. Once again, thank you so much for your contribution. Thank you.